Sorry.
Father, we thank you right now for your mercy and goodness, especially over the name of what you need to us right now. Thank you for what you stand for. Thank you, Father, for this council, this commission. We thank you for these people that are here tonight. And Father, we pray right now that we take ourselves out of it and let you become the main object. We pray for blessings upon the council members that are sick. And we thank you right now for all these that's in this community that's going through. Father, we know you know all about it. And from the foundation of the world, you know these days would come. And we thank you now. Bless us as we go from one good degree to another. This we do ask and bless you now. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, and you may be seated. I will petition the meeting for commission and everybody that this is a workshop meeting. Take a vote, take resolutions, passions. So, if at any point in the proceedings you want to discuss, just get my attention. You can, the folks, if I don't see you, some of them will. And when you have an opportunity to speak. Now I'm going to put number four ahead of number three. I hate this for the railroad, but the reason for it. So we're on number four. The board to discuss the Florida property tax exemptions for senior citizens. The property tax exemption for senior citizens amendment as amended by Commissioner Moody.
Mr. Chair, Bruce is here to kind of explain this option to us here and kind of give us a, he's done his research on it and got his paperwork there to kind of give us a good highlight on this.
Well, what we need to know. I'll try my best.
Consider this. This is much needed, I think, in our county, and a lot of people that would benefit from it. The seniors exemptions, there's a couple of options here. There's actually two options that you have. The first option is an additional up to is the key word of that, a $50,000 exemption on their homestead properties. Some counties have 10,000, some counties have few more, a few less, but it can go upwards of 50,000. There's 67 counties, 61 counties offer some type of this exemption. There's six of us that don't. Those are the ones on your sheet there that do not have any value beside them. Okay? That was, those counties would be Citrus County, Dixie County, Marion County, which is really surprising, Pasco and Pinellas and us offer no senior exemption of any type, and the other 61 counties do. There's some values related to those values. Those are taxable values in each one of those counties. A lot of that's based on the size and the amount of that exemption that the board chose to give. So with the first exemption, you're up to $50,000 is your option. Sometimes county may consider, they'll start with the $10,000 and see actually what they have as far as applications. The bad part that I can't tell you is the impact it's going to have on the county financially, because these are all threshold, there's an income threshold limitation to it. So I'm not having those income, that income data, I can't tell you how many people will qualify for the exemption. So page two of there gives you, this started out originally in 2001 at $20,000 for the family income. That's now, this year, $29,454. So they would have to prove, you know, they'd have to provide their information on their income before they qualify. The any questions on that?
So anyone who makes more than these numbers would qualify for the exemption?
That's correct. That's correct.
So this is for the
these are people
who need. Like me, need.
These people need.
Is that income of all sources, including Social Security, or just
Social Security?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It looks like me, the ones that fall under that really need to have.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that fall under that income limitation, really the ones that need to help out. And that's really it's basic.
And this is in addition to the homestead exemptions.
That's correct. That's correct.
Brilliant. So it would be possible that you wouldn't be paying taxes anyway if you're low income.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I would think
somebody likes having houses that don't value enough, more than $25,000.
Right. A lot of these homes are probably covered with the $25,000 that exists, the first $25,000. But it will catch that gap in those others that aren't.
And all the stuff you have to do would be proof of income?
Proof of income, yeah, is one of the qualifications.
Mr. Bishop?
Would it be in addition to widows and widowers exemption also?
It would be. It would be. It would be an exemption on top of those. Our widows and widowers exemption is a $500 in value exemption, which amounts to about $16 in taxes, which is embarrassing. But it's been that same amount since 1905, I think. And we've really pushed hard this year to try to get that up to at least $5,000 in value, where it will actually have some impact on a widow or a widower.
It would be appreciated.
We're trying. But it's in legislation now, so we're lobbying that one pretty
hard. And the veterans go, that falls right in there with the veterans?
That would be on top. This would be on top of those.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, there has to be an exemption on property that these folks have a permanent residence on.
That's correct.
So mm-hmm. It couldn't be a big timber tract out somewhere.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
You do have some homesteads that are bigger than one or two acres, so you know those pieces would be included on it too. That's your first option. Your second option, we call this the Miami Dade option, because that was really the intent behind, or some of the intent behind it. Any home less than $250,000 that they've lived in for 25 years and they're over 65 years of age is totally exempt.
Say that again now.
Any home less than $250,000.
That's me.
That's you. That have lived in the home for 25 years.
That's me.
That's you. Are totally exempt.
Whoa. Wow. Wow, that's pretty cool.
Just the properties
that
are, I mean, like he's got
agriculture.
His homestead.
Just the homestead.
You've been talking about a homestead out in the country where I am.
You
can't be a house and that's 160 acres.
What happened here in the intent of this was where home values just went astronomical, and you had people that had lived in those homes for 25 years, and they were basically being taxed out of their homes. And with the values in South Florida. So they gave this option, and some of the southern counties have adopted this to just literally save people from being taxed out of their home. So we really wouldn't have, that wouldn't really apply to us. We don't have a lot of $250,000 in 25 years. So, but it is an option, and I don't
Yeah, there's no income option two.
Income applies to that also.
Income applies to that also? Income,
yes.
Whoa,
does not have a household income that exceeds the income limitation. That's correct. So household, the income would apply.
Mm-hmm. And some counties in South Florida actually have it.
They do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, once again, the impact of these would be difficult for me. An idea that you might consider is a smaller reduction of 10,000 or 20,000 exemption, and then we can gather that data and those applications, and then if you choose to increase that, you know, we'll be able to take the impact, you know, pretty close. But as of now, you know, it'd be kind of hard for me to take because I don't have the income data. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bishop.
Do you understand that this would be, I haven't read the statute. Does it, do you do it by ordinance?
I don't know that, I hadn't went through that one. So I was just trying to get you some data on what.
Because the reason I ask it.
Well, if you look at the first page.
Does it say by ordinance?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
You have adopted local ordinance.
Yeah. Right. Well, if you do it by ordinance, then if you can repeal it then.
Correct.
That's where I was getting at.
Some county or city governments
are you gonna sunset
local
it?
Ordinance section 6D, Article 7 of the Florida Constitution.
Yeah.
So that's where you can grab it.
Or you could sunset it.
Okay.
You know?
If you take a person who owns a house that's less than $250,000, been there 25 years, and they're 65 or over, if they're limited by this income,
mm-hmm.
It takes all they can do to buy groceries and pay their insurance and stuff like that.
It does. And that's your second option. Right. We have two options.
And we're going to do both options.
Or you can do both. You can do both. It's up to $50,000 is your first option, and they're over 65, and they don't exceed the income threshold.
Does that have to be both people in the home?
That's combined family income in the home. If there's three recipients that are living in the home and it's all three of those income, total household income.
Right. And you compile all of them's income.
Correct.
And your office would be in charge of.
Yes, sir.
Receiving the income.
Yep.
Proof.
That's confidential information. We would, you know, redact all that from public records. We would have that separate, so it would be safe.
This is about the same, they call it poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We have to use those and determine what they pay up here.
I can take the census report. About 85% is considered poverty. And so we can take that number and play with it some and get us some kind of, I was just wanting to see what the pleasure of the board was and how far you wanted to go. We're trying to figure it out. But I can come up with a number, but it's not going to be totally accurate. But it'll be something to talk about.
Well, we have no idea. To start with, how many property owners
mm-hmm.
are at that income level? Mm-hmm. And then of those, you don't know how many are going to sign up. So there's no way you can tell us what the net effect would be on the...
Well, like you said...
I can give you worst-case scenario. I can tell you everybody that's over 65 and just go, hey, if everybody qualified, this would be your impact. I can give you that. I'm sorry.
That's right. I was just suggesting the census information. They have it by age block, so you could at worst tell them how many are over a certain age in the entire county.
Mm-hmm.
And assume all of them was 100% participation.
Yeah. I can give you worst case scenario. 100% everybody qualifies, this is your number. I can give you that one.
That would be an interesting figure to give you a food for thought on
sure.
Anyway.
You know. Yeah. You like for me to get that for you?
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now, we don't know what percentage of everybody would meet these guidelines as far as income. Be considered less.
As Kenneth said, the census part, you know, we can play with those numbers a little bit. They'll give us, you know, some idea.
He could probably take those numbers and then assign, like, say, a $10,000 limit, which is, you said, $5,000 was $16, so 10 would be $32.
Mm-hmm.
Apply that times that 65 and older population, and that's it would never be more than that.
It's true. You have a max. Not a lot of trouble for you to do for us.
Yeah.
Jim, would that be a place to start?
I don't appreciate you doing that.
Good.
And that would give us a little more thought on it. And
yeah.
I think we need to do something, but we really, you know, we do.
Kind of like know what the impact was.
Not exactly right.
I would give you worst case.
I'd love to help a few people that would, you know, could qualify.
You know, the people that have $600 a month income on Social Security has $400 tax bill. That's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
That's a big deal. We have homes that get lost and actually over such, and we really try really hard to prevent any of that from happening, but it does happen. So it would be a great benefit for those on Social Security.
Some of those parcels is on those lists I give you of county owned certificates, but I don't have any of them to share with Homestead.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, we'll get that. I'll get that to. Can we get that in there? Or do you want to get
a Ted? Mr. Ted.
Ted?
Okay. And anything? Both.
I'll give it to Ted.
All right.
Okay. Well, take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bruce, come
back. See you later.
See you later.
Hi, Bruce.
All right, now we are going to do item 3 on the agenda. The board to discuss the federal competitiveness and employment by rail as the CEBUIR program grant. And Ted, do you want to introduce?
I can give an introduction, certainly. Several months ago, when I'm sitting in the office and I get this out of the blue call from Congressman Neil Dunn, and I said, you have been awarded an $8.6 million grant. And I wasn't even aware we applied for. so then you start thinking, well, what do we need to do? These gentlemen have been very helpful. I've had them introduce themselves. Dave from the railroad and Adam that works for the railroad. So Dave, you just want to introduce yourself and to the board and tell everybody about what this grant entails. Because you've been very helpful with me and my staff.
Sure.
Up to speed.
Commissioners, thank you for having us here this evening and giving us an opportunity to talk a little bit about our project here, which I think is going to be very beneficial to Taylor County and the living wage jobs that our little railroad supports. I'm here with Adam Nordstrom, who is our Washington representative in D.C. Adam and I work with our friends at the state and federal levels, both FDOT and USDOT and FRA. And to that point, with us here this evening and willing to address you to talk about rail in Florida, we have Ricky Fitzgerald, rail manager from the Florida Department of Transportation. So we appreciate his coming to the workshop as well. It's probably worth a minute or two of background to remind all of you why we're here. Omnitrax is the company that operates the Georgia and Florida Railroad here in Taylor County. We are what's known as a short line railroad, which means that the line we operate was spun off by the Class 1s years ago, the big guys, Norfolk Southern, when it no longer made economic sense for them to continue to operate. So by its very nature, a short line railroad earns its living off the table scraps of what the big boys could no longer afford to run. And with that mission, we took over the operation of the Georgia, Florida about 20 years ago, and have been principally serving the one customer at the end of our railroad, which was Buckeye, now is GP Cellulose, and there are 600 jobs that are employed at the facility there. What's brought us to this grant is that for a number of years, the revenues that we have been receiving off this traffic for various reasons has not been remunerative enough for us to put capital, needed capital, back into our property. And so much like a roadway that goes through too many freeze-thaw cycles and begins to deteriorate to the point of no return, so has our rail bed been occurring to. We first decided that the best way to practice self-help was to try and develop a public-private partnership and apply for the federal programs that were born out of the 2009 stimulus program and have been in effect ever since. Many of you may not be aware, this is the fourth time we have applied for this grant. The first time was predecessors of ours, supported by Taylor County in 2009, originally put in a grant that also at that time included the much more expansive idea of building new rail to the Rock Gardens. If you remember that.
Yeah.
In 2015, we took another run at specifically this line and it was submitted by the Florida Department of Transportation on our behalf. That was not awarded money, and in 2016, we came back to Taylor County and asked to partner again, and we submitted a grant application with them, which again was not funded. So in 2017, finally, when the new Fast Lane program came out, we came back to the offices, and there had just been a change, and Ted had just taken over, and we said, hey, here's an application we had put in last year. Are you supportive of us resubmitting it again this year? And as Ted had mentioned, our 2nd District Congressman, Neil Dunn, is a big supporter of short line railroads. He understands the role we're trying to play in our communities. He played an instrumental role in helping make sure that this grant came to Florida. He's been watching it. He told Adam and I to report back on how our meeting went and hoping that things are developing interest and traction. And so that's how we come here to talk to you today about this project, which will rebuild the entire railroad from where you see it start at the plant, across the Florida-Georgia state line, to the little town of Adel, where we interchange with the Norfolk Southern. So the $17 million project includes 50% federal funds. The other 50% will come from Omnitrax. And Adam and I have done these types of public-private partnerships a number of times before. And for projects that require a public partner, where we demonstrated the public benefits of saving those 600 living wage jobs, our goal as the railroad is to make it as painless as possible on the public entity. We've assured Ted and LaWanda and Melody that we would like to have no burden come to the county or the city in administering this grant. We're perfectly willing and able to do everything we can with the hope that the county's involvement is really limited to pressing the email button on the updates that we would provide you and send on to the FRA and the USDOT. At this point, let me ask you if there's any questions or if Adam, you have anything else to add?
Why don't you open up the questions and I can provide some additional comments if they've got any.
Yes, sir. When can you start?
We can start as soon as we can get our federal government to sign the piece of paper that allows us to do that.
Yeah. Can you summarize the just the context of the expected openings?
Railroads are built, they're steel rails laid on wooden ties supported by a rock subsurface. That's really all railroads are, is rock, ballast, ties, and rail. And what this project will do is rehabilitate all three of those, put in new ballast, bring in new ties, change out pieces of rail where necessary, with the goal of allowing for safe operation of the railroad from the current 10-mile-an-hour speed it is today up to 25.
That's really nice.
So it changes the class of track.
And that makes a big difference from the public benefit side of things on this. I mean, right now, where you've got an 81-mile run from Adel to the plant, and when you have a limit to how long your crew can operate that train, effectively it takes that trip, it turns it into a two-day trip. And that creates all kinds of inefficiencies. I mean, you're really, a brisk jog, you could do the trip faster than the train can do it at. And that's just not a level of efficiency that you want to have in rail transportation. So the real upgrade that's gonna benefit the plant here is upgrading that infrastructure to make it be able to move at a 25-mile-an-hour rate of speed, so that instead of that being a 2-3-day trip down and back, you can get down and get back in a much more efficient way. And that should improve the amount of traffic that moves by rail instead of by truck.
So is there a presumed demand for two times the additional traffic on that at your end supply?
One of the challenges we currently face is that we have the luxury of having two Class 1 connections, both CSX and Norfolk Southern. The problem is that this railroad, in its current condition, is not economically feasible for Norfolk Southern to send their cars down here and back. They can't make any money at it. But once we rehabilitate this railroad, they will be able to be competitive again in capturing that traffic, which, to your question, could bring more business to the railroad and off of I-10, But it also will benefit the plant because they'll get the benefit of more competitive rates when Norfolk Southern and CSX begin to compete again. To the public, the benefits that, that residents of Taylor County will see, in addition to perhaps waiting a minute or two less at crossing when the train goes by at over twice the speed, when we go through and rehabilitate this line, which will be done in somewhat of a linear fashion, we'll start at A and we'll work our way to B, as we go through each one of the public grade crossings and we tear that up and rebuild the railroad, we will also rebuild all those grade crossing surfaces so that hopefully you all will get less calls about somebody's muffler falling off when they went over the rough crossing.
How far away from the rails are you going to extend your reconditioning?
Just within the fiscal limits of our own right-of-way, it's usually...
So you go to the limit of your right-of-way?
Well, no, we won't have to unless we require, doing some ditching or something to keep the water away from the track. Generally, it'll just be the existing ballast structure that you see today.
Okay. Think about it as generally a little bit more than the width of the tile.
So,
The nice thing about railroad projects in the environment that we live in today is when we are fixing railroad track that we already own on property we already own, we're allowed to be granted what's called a categorical exemption from having to do any NEPA or environmental work.
National Environmental Protection Act.
So that means that literally as soon as we get the materials and the people on site, we can go to town. We don't have to do a 36 months environmental review and get all that stuff done. We can actually do the project very quickly.
I have a question. Part of this $17 million, I would hope, would be spent on improving some railroad crossings or adding a couple of new ones. Shady Grove, all it.
As we work with over the years with On the Track all about Shady Grove, it's the only paved crossing doesn't have a line on. We talk at
right.
Our first conversation that came up. But anyway, we leave that. And that hopefully you figure put that into plan somewhere.
It's a great question. Let me answer directly. Our grant and the scope of work contemplates replacing exactly what is there today in kind. Now, the role that the Florida Department of Transportation plays is they continually monitor grade crossings and they see which ones are getting increased or decreased traffic, and they make decisions each year on which crossings can benefit from an active signal upgrade. And I don't want to put words in Ricky's mouth, but he knows it's on his list to look at to see if it can pass muster.
We had a study a while back about enough traffic, but we think that the process is DOT will approve it. You put it in, DOT pays for it, but I've been told over the years.
And that's a standing program that exists today.
I understand. There's nothing new about that. But anyway, the other question I've got, this goes into the Taylor County. We've got the grant here, but it's in Madison and Ron Calkins County. Have y'all had any contact with the county manager? I called him today. He goes through Madison and Brooks and then Cook County, I guess.
No, not that it really matter, but I just think... We're only lining up support for the project, and we talked to the Whitman Brooks County folks, and they have a parcel of land up there that they'd like to build an industrial park on, and that's served by our railroad. That was one of the multi-state retention outlets. So our focus right now for the group here and for Wanda, Ted, and Melody is we're at a little past the beginning of getting all of our documentation together for the Federal Railroad Administration and ultimately USDOT to create an actual agreement between DOT and Taylor County and then Taylor County and the Georgia Florida Railroad to begin actualizing all this stuff. So we're here today to get your blessing to submit the statement of work that we have created for FRA in the hopes that they will then take the next step in asking us what else they need or what we can do to get toward closing of these grants.
Mr. Bishop.
You're going to have to give the blessing in a regular meeting. This is a workshop.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Okay, I just didn't want my client to misunderstand.
Can you explain what that documentation is all about? We can discuss that. Yeah, we can discuss what you're asking us to do. We certainly can discuss that. We just have a vote on it.
Yeah, I'm not. Do you believe that will need a vote of the commissioners, or is that within your control?
It never hurts to give a vote.
Sure. Well, so what we're doing is DOT is very, very descriptive in the things they want to see and the way they want things done. I'm sure you've administered federal grants here in the county before. You know how picky they can be about details. And one of the primary inputs for this grant is the detailed statement of work on exactly what we're going to buy and how the work's going to be done and what it all looks like. We have done a couple versions of that. We believe we have it in the form that FRA is now looking for it to be returned to them in. We have provided that to Ted and his staff, and we're waiting for their concurrence, basically, to submit it back to DOT.
One other question we want to get clear on is how the money will flow. It is Taylor County's grant, but money's coming from Omnitracs, money's coming from the feds. What kind of responsibilities do we have? Auditing, making sure the work performed, our obligations.
Yeah.
Well, there's probably about 15 questions wrapped up in that question. And Ricky, I would say at any point you can provide value here.
Yeah, I was going to jump in, but I wanted to go ahead and let you try to feel if you want. I can jump in right now.
Please.
So, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. So, what I want to do, why I wanted to come here, I wanted to kind of give you some comfort in knowing that this is something that we've been dealing with at FDOT with these grants. As well, we have a system that's set up that we deal with it, right? It's kind of a little unique to us that where the grant has come directly to the county. So we are looking at it in a different perspective, but we want to be there to offer you some type of technical guidance if you need it. So the question that he's asking now, how would you deal with that? If you had anything like with a grant in the past, if you had a grant before in the past for the federal, there's really no difference in it in the way you deal with it. I guess talking to Melody, she's the name, you're the name person on it as far as when the application was submitted. They will deal directly with her. They'll send it to her, right? And if there's some invoicing that needs to be done, it'll come through her.
Okay.
For them. It's very critical that everything is timely. There are some performance measures that you have to submit about what they're doing and how they're doing it, if they're doing everything that it's supposed to do before they can get their payment. Now, the other part, how you all are going to work it out as far as the work and how it's going to be done and exactly what you say you need approved, that's something that we have to do ahead of time, I would urge that you go ahead and do it as soon as possible. And I know you say you needed a vote on it, but I would say get it done as soon as possible, even though there is some red tape with moving with the grant. But I think the downside to it, once those funds are obligated, if you don't move on those funds, there's a possibility that those funds could be disrupted. I mean, it slows down, it could be moved, it depends on who's in office. So you have to keep that in consideration too. So I would say move on as fast as possible. So that you can approve and agree on that. Once that process is done, I'll work with Melody and say how you do a procurement process. If you have someone, a consultant that you can have that can work with you, get that process started as soon as possible to help you do with the administration part if you don't have the expertise on that. And we're always open, FDOT is always open for questions if you have any technical questions that we can provide assistance for you.
So, who would be doing the inspection on the actual work?
See, that, so if you get someone to get a project manager, then you can do a request for a proposal. And I'm going to say that can be paid through that grant. So you can get that RFP, you can push that out, request for proposal, find a good consultant that can do that for you, that can help you out. And they will make sure that the work, that the statement of work that was actually posted is going to get done, and you have to do performance measures every time you submit for payment. So every time they ask for something, they have to prove that they've done their work. The project manager reads over it and say, yes, they have, and then the invoice then starts.
Can I ask a question? The latest document we have is a draft statement of work. Mm-hmm. So that is not the official document. That is what is being sent on to FRA, and we will get an actual statement of work that maybe needs to be approved.
Yeah, that's the, yes, ma'am, that's about the third version of that document that's gone back and forth. The last version, the most of that language that you see in that most recent version of that document was actually language that was written by the staff from the Office of the Secretary of Transportation in D.C. and the what we call the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration. They have a railroad expert, a railroad grants expert, who's been tasked to assist the Office of the Secretary in structuring the statement of work. The statement of work will get encapsulated into the agreement. That's so that none of the funds can be released from the federal government, and we can't. No one can start work on expenditure of funds on the project until you have a signed grant agreement. And this would be an agreement between the United States Department of Transportation and the county. Right. That's the bare minimum that you would have to have in order for that to happen. The statement of work is. It becomes a part of that document.
We're not there yet.
Okay. Yeah, so everything that's going back and forth right now is purely trading of drafts. There's been no commitment, no legal commitment on the part of the county to anything with USDOT up to this point.
Well, if I can ask a question, this may be a comment question too. If it's just a statement of work that's not committing us to anything, can we send that?
I mean, the funnel starts to narrow, Counselor. I mean, the more you discuss these things in draft form,
right,
the leeway narrows naturally.
But we're covered. We go ahead and work.
I've got a question.
Okay.
Y'all.
Go ahead.
Is this a reimbursable?
Yes, sir.
Yes, it is.
So we have that's the only. Yeah. So the.
Well, we're gonna get the $8 million, and how long is it gonna take for us to be repaid? That's a lot of money for a small county.
That's right. And so the way that this will work and should work.
And we don't want no shutdown either.
That's right. No, neither do we. So the Omnitrax is going to, and Dave can speak on behalf of the company here, but the project that's envisioned is it's a $16 million project. Omnitrax is going to pay those bills, and they're committed to pay 50% of it. Once that work is paid for, the invoices that Ricky is talking about have been submitted back to the U.S. Department of Transportation. They will then wire money here, and then that money will go to reimburse 50% of what they outlaid. So they're financing the product. All the money is from them, not from your coffers.
Okay.
But the grant money that comes back to reimburse them for 50% of it will flow through you.
We're a conduit.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I understand.
Is it dicey?
Y'all understand what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that means we have to follow the federal grant procurement. We have to follow everything. We are ultimately responsible.
You have to do it, yeah, the accounting.
And our auditor needs to know what's going on.
By the feds. And they will, once whoever submitted the application, whoever's responsible for that is named on the applicant, they actually have a meeting with you. It's a kickoff meeting. Mm-hmm. And they'll explain all the things that are needed for that. From the front end, they try to make sure that you are feasible to be able to hold a grant anyway. So if they gave you the grant, they feel like you can carry the grant.
And this is not common.
Are you recommending that we immediately be preparing an RFP for a project manager now?
Yes.
And have that process underway? Because yes, obviously we're not rail experts.
Right.
Are going to be somewhat dependent on that person.
Yes.
Do you have a template or something we can work off of? Because this is all new to us.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I can ask it in a different way.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't see that they necessarily don't have the qualifications for project management. What I would foresee is that the CEI aspect of the project would be a little more specialized. And I was going to ask if DOT generally has to end contracts with consultants for various CEI.
Yeah.
Work products.
Yes.
If you have one of those that was standing on the shelf, you know, could we make use of that for this project?
I could find the list where I see. Yeah, we actually do that in our procurement office and rate them and everything. So if you need that list, we can give you that list. But
we have two on contract, but I'm not sure if it includes the the work group for railroads. It's more specialized towards roadways, because that's the bulk of our work. I looked to see if it's inclusive. But if it's not inclusive in our work scope, then if you have a standing contract, we'd obviously like to make use of that. The other aspect of it to me is you submit a schedule of values, the CDI signs off on it, provides it back to us and says, hey, this invoice is appropriate for payment. And I don't see it as a big deal on our side.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, yes, I can get that list for you, and
if you could get
Melody up to speed on it, and I think that's a good call.
I think she's maybe overthinking it, but okay. I think she does the same thing.
Okay. And it's really no different. It's just you got one mall versus another, yes, rail versus highway. With the CEI personnel though, that having some knowledge and experience on the rail side, then yes, we can find a list for you.
Yeah, and there are a number of firms. I would stress what Ricky's saying is you really want somebody who understands federal grants and railroad and those two things together. Because
that's why I asked him, because it was a pretty extensive project to get our RFPs for the consultants that we have on firm federalized.
Yeah.
My expectation is your RFPs were already federalized, so there shouldn't be any questions
as far as
being applying.
I'm thinking yes, but I'm trying to remember if they had, I know we had a process for state level. I didn't know if they really had to be certified for it on level.
We did it through Roosevelt.
The first grant that were qualified to do the big thing after the night, we worked with them.
Okay.
Same consultants.
Okay.
But just so you can look and see if you have a firm that could fit our needs for this, that would make it tremendously easier.
Yes, and so you already have your RFP process, procurement process already in line, ready to go? Okay.
Yes.
Why is that even a concern if you've gone through that process with one selected?
Because we're not named on the agreement, on the grant. We're not named on it, so it's you and the feds. And so, all the processes that you're going through has to be driven by you, has to be wanted and driven by you.
But with the lab project, DOT offers consultants through their procurement process for county uses without us having to go through that procurement process.
But I think you have to use lab funds for that, which is local, which are local funds.
Are they local or federal?
Lab, local.
It's a local agency program. Federal funds.
We, under our work program, those are considered local funds, even though we have a match for federal, they're still considered local funds. And again, this is a grant versus our work program. This grant money is not work program money. All our work program money, we have to send it as a budget to our legislation. They have to know every cent that we spend. So to have a grant that's not on our books that we are putting resources on, we have to justify that.
And then my question is, once we have a project manager on board, we will probably be getting an executed grant agreement. In the meantime, we need to immediately turn around and do an RFP then for the contractual services.
I think if you can get it all in one, that'd be great. If you can get a CEI and project manager, because I have seen that number before. That'll probably just, if you can find that firm that has that, all those resources that you need, that'll be great. I think that'll save you a lot of time. But let me go ahead and ask some questions from our procurement office and see what we have. We have a list of those folks and see where we go from there.
Yeah, let me say this too, Melody, that, you know, if we had been able to apply for this grant on our own, we have all of the resources both in-house and through our purchasing department where we would have either internalized this and used our own resources for project management, or we would have done exactly what we're discussing here. We would have put out an RFP. We have a known list of contractors and experts we use. We just did a very similar project to this last year in Illinois, and we hired a project manager to oversee that. So our goal in this process is to give you the level of oversight and control that you're comfortable with while trying to minimize the county's burden in this process. And so what I mean by that is, if you want us to go and run an RFP to find a project management consultant, and you may tell us, you go ahead and do it, you're the experts, just make sure it's not an internal employee because we want a disinterested third party, we can do whatever bidding it is you'd like us to do. We can do the legwork for you and then present you the list of qualified candidates, and it can be as if it's your RFP. We're willing to do any of this that helps make it easier for your staff.
I'm just quite concerned because this is our first grant like this. I want to make sure we're doing everything right, that we understand everything we're doing, because, you know, when we read that, there's an awful lot of commitments. And like Mr. Conrad said, I know, you know, we're poor here. I mean, we all know that. And I'm just being straight up, and I just want to make sure we understand what we're getting into, and that I understand all your expectations for me, and we do it right. Kenneth has worked with a lot of roads. I did FAA aviation, and but I just think it's like, this is a huge project for us, and it's a big deal to do it right. And I think we went into it a little blind with the attitude like, we've submitted these several times that on behalf of the county, and we're not going to get it anyway. Which we're really grateful we're getting it, but I just want to make sure we...
You're the dog that caught the car.
Yeah. I just want to make sure you're going to be walking with us through this, and I feel that confidence. Ricky's made me feel confident when he's been up there. I feel a lot better because I feel like I've got somebody to walk with me now that knows what they're doing.
Adam and I would consider it a personal failure if we leave any kind of undue burden on you or Wanda or Ted.
We feel that way too.
I would say that this is it speaks well, you know, for you to have something like this. This is a big deal. We've been trying to get Fastlane grants and Infra grants for the last past 3 years, and it's a huge deal throughout the state. A lot of people compete for them. You know, you have the big cities that are always competing for them. They put a lot of money into trying to do it. For you to get it, it's a huge deal. And I think, you know, if it's going to preserve those jobs that you have, that's a huge deal. If it's going to shift that mode of traffic from the highway onto the rail, that's another important huge deal for safety, and also help the commerce out a lot. So I think really it's a good deal that you got this and you should take advantage of it.
I have another question. This may be a contract or whoever wants to answer. Are we allowed to let them issue the RFP? Or is that something we got to do then?
I think we need to do it.
But they can assist.
Hey, and there's no plagiarism in this. You know, we can copy.
I have a question, but it's my turn.
Yes.
As an elected official in a small county like ours, where we have numerous railroad problems, we get complaints from time to time from citizens. One in particular I can think about, you know, up here in my district. The folks have difficulty getting across the old rough railroad track. Mm-hmm. Now, the crossings, not talking about the lights that are flashing and all of that, but just the timbers you're going to do, cross ties and aggregate and rails, are you going to redo some crossings?
Yes.
To eliminate these complaints?
Everyone.
Those are called crossing surfaces. So
crossing surfaces.
Yes.
Think about T.W. Woods. Hanging out there, over that thing, dozens of years.
There's a lot of crossings that are really not legit, but Georgia's probably tried to close them here back 4 or 5 years ago, but they still haven't said, you're not going to close those that serve people's homes, are you? Will they be upgraded?
That's a discussion for another day, right? Whether or not private crossings should be where they are, but we're not going to address that as part of this grant. We will replace in kind everything that is currently there as we did the work.
Good.
Okay.
And in their scope of work, just so you know, Mr. Malcolm, they've included a listing of all of the crossings, and we'll have
access to that list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's my question. Anybody else?
Mr. Lake, you opened the conversation with the congratulations or something like that. In fact, you've been awarded an $8 million grant. Wasn't there a scope of work submitted and the costs are predicated upon that? And yet I hear you're going through and whittling a scope of work now after the grant award.
Welcome to my frustrations. Yes, it is an iterative process with the USDOT. So absolutely, there was a budget submitted. The items down to numbers of ties and ties per mile and tons of ballast was all submitted as a part of this application. So those numbers were relatively well defined. The statement of work includes a lot more than just the numbers of ties, for example. And of course, those are values which are in flux over time. There are times of the year when ties are more expensive than they're not. So there's a timing element to that too. Our procurement guys understand that very well. It's their job to understand that. I mean, that's what they're paid to do. So we're very confident in those numbers. It may come to the point where, if we see a dip in tie prices coming, there may become a timing deal where you actually get more ties for what you propose. I don't think we're going to wind up on short end.
But to your question, we have to do the amount of work we specify in the application we do. That has never changed.
That's never changed.
It's all the nomenclature and whether you add up or down or left or right that we've been repurposing for
the people who evaluate the grants want it in a different form than the legal guys who clear the first draft, and then they want it in a different form from the guys where I get thank you, Rick's been through this. They want it in a different form than the final guys who sign off on what goes into the statement of work. It is not an efficient process.
Like CFDOT had their safety engineer for about a week riding doing that analysis. There's no trouble doing some work.
Yeah, but there's not a The final form of statement of work is a more detailed version of what was submitted in the original grant. But the parameters from the original grant won't change. Does that answer your question?
Okay. I have one more question. Or are you done?
I'm sorry. I have one more.
Given that the train, the speed of the train is going to be an expected increase from a 10-mile-per-hour current up to a 25-mile-per-hour expected, it would seem that the active passive controls at these crossings would also be a consideration in the original scope.
Do you want to address that or do you want me to do it?
You live with railroads?
Yeah, no, right?
that's
a
incredibly pressing question. And the answer is yes. Every active grade crossing that's currently timed for 10 will be retimed for 25 as part of the work.
A lot of conflicts about in town. We looked at moving it one time, but we'll do a deal with that. We get the grant.
There is one fun factoid about this grant that I would be remiss if I didn't share. Fast Lane was the acronym they came up for this competitive grant program as part of the last reauthorization of the Highway Trust Fund. And because this program was administered in this last year during the change of an administration, the bulk of the grants they decided to hold over and do a big one that's more controlled by the new administration.
Yeah, the applications had gone in under the Obama administration. The Trump administration wanted to pull all that back and make a new decision.
So, to sprinkle a little bit of pixie dust, they just decided they would make awards to the small project portion of the grant program, which in total was $80 million. So the factoid here is that this little project in Taylor County received over 10% of the federally available funds for that year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Makes us feel good. They had 1 year there was 50 grants for railroad before they get the first one. Corey and Marin over the actual
computers. Yeah.
I just had a question about the timeline, because I remember when we read through some of the materials that you wanted to perform the work off season or in a different cycle because of winter versus summer and it was seasonal. But do we have any idea at all of when this could even possibly start?
Well, so, that's a good question, and the answer all goes back to as soon as we have the signed agreement with DOT. We do have timelines in our statement of work. I would say that the date listed is less relevant now than the spread of time between the tasks and how fast we can do the work once we've started. You know, our goal is to get the agreement signed as quickly as we can so that we can then take advantage of the latitude of pricing and timing of the season to get the biggest benefit out of the work.
That's where I was going. So if so, what is the so if you miss this season, mm-hmm. you know, if FRA drags their feet or however it works, will you wait until the next go round, or will you just push through it?
So in most of North America, there is a construction season, right? It's usually like April or May through October. Fortunately, in Florida, you really don't have that limitation. You could do a project like this in November, December, January. Okay. We are not advocating to sit on our hands until November, December, January. In fact, the railroad needs investment right now.
I understand.
But as soon as we get the agreement done, we will take a look at the marketplace and the suppliers and see if we can't leverage timing of the season to get even more assets to put in the ground. You know, in other words, if the grant said we're going to buy 100 ties because we were assuming each tie was going to cost $60, and now we find out if we wait a couple of weeks, we can get them for $50, and we can put in 20 more ties than we thought we would, that's something we don't want to try to do,
really.
It just makes it last longer.
I would answer your question in a different way, Luan. You have one statutory requirement or regulatory requirement in the grant, and that is that the money for the grant has to be obligated by September 30th of 2019. Now, that doesn't mean it has to have all been spent, and it certainly doesn't mean the work has to be done, but the contracts have to be penned for the work, and the money has to be contractually obligated by that date. Now, that's, in our mind, way too far in the future, because the railroad, as Dave said, the railroad needs work right now. Ricky, did you want to add something?
No, you're right on point.
So, once the money is obligated, then the work has to be completed within 18 months.
That was my next.
Yeah.
So it's 18 months.
From the point of obligation.
Mm-hmm. Which we do not.
And that won't be a problem. I mean, this is the way these track, they call them track gangs, and you have this huge, you know, it used to be, you know, the old movies with the, you know, the Westerns with the guys in the spike malls, you know, right? Don't do it that way anymore, right? It's these huge machines that go down, and they pull out the bad ties, and they move the ballast, and it's just this mechanized factory that moves down the track, and it will start at one end of the line, and it will go to the other end of the line, and when it rolls past, the work is done there, and it's yet to be done in front of it, and it just will go all the way down the line, and that's how the work will get done.
Right. Cool. Now, you're not replacing every time.
Yes, sir. No, sir. No, I mean, every time. It's a big tire replacement project.
Yes.
I mean, over 100,000 ties is considered a very significant tire replacement project. In the end, when we describe to people how many ties we're replacing, their eyes get a little saucer shaped. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a big deal for railroad nerds.
Long time.
How will it affect Georgia Pacific on the rail? How long will it take? Will it be downtime?
You want to talk about operations?
I mean, generally speaking, work of this nature can be done, you know, what we call under traffic. And that's partly due to the limited number of trains we currently run on the railroad. You know, if we were running an expressway where we had trains every hour, it would be a big problem. We don't. So we will schedule times where we work, and then Georgia Pacific gets served, and then we continue.
In other words, you pull your machine off the track and come by with a load of cars, and then
the next
week
true.
They had one, and I've got a bunch of scheduled
meetings.
Most
of them are in that way, anyway.
Yeah.
I got you. Appreciate it. Yes, in other words, you're not going to hold them up in any way.
No.
Okay.
No, it's assumed to be, you know, under work done under traffic.
Right.
And when you get close to the plant, there may be, you know, a day or two that they have to work out with their traffic manager. But
how much incentive is this going to give to other companies to come in and build along the track? Have y'all seen that in other areas where you?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, one of the goals of shortline railroaders is to try and protect and preserve service to the rural counties that they serve. And other than the small lumber yard down here in Perry, cellulose is the only customer on this railroad. Now, having said that, you know, Quinbrooks County has that potential industrial park they want to build across the state line. But when manufacturers are looking to locate in an area, ideally like Taylor County, that has good cost of living, low electricity prices, good wage rates, and they need rail service.
Right.
The first question they're going to want to know all the time today is, if I'm on a short line, is the short line in good enough shape to support my business? And does that short line have access to more than one of the big Class 1 railroads so that I can make them compete for my business?
We've got a business kind of looking at coming here out by the mill, and I would just, they'd be asking questions like that.
Is that the biomass guy? Or
Yeah.
We worked with Denver on several projects and way back there, and Will Metcalf, he's been down looking. We've got several thousand acres north of town, suggested near track that's zoned for industrial. We've got some issues with landowner, but it is. And that's the way I got involved with Will and those in Denver. And Mr. Brody knows more real estate person than he is a railroad person.
Well, this is a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Because a rebuilt railroad helps incent industrial development. New industrial development helps the railroad continue to survive. I mean, it's all exactly what you call incentive to see happen.
Hey, one thing we've touted, we've got access to CSX and common tracks here. There's limits of what CSX can do, just but people like that, who's going to do a Taylor Energy Mountain, they like to be able to negotiate between the two to get better freight rates. And that's a big advantage to us.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
All right.
I have one more question.
Melody, go ahead.
On the match, I know a small portion of the match was coming from GP. Will y'all be responsible for obtaining those funds?
GP has an ongoing commercial relationship with our Will Metcalfs and others, and they're working out some kind of commercial terms to participate in the project. But as far as you're concerned, everything's coming from Omnitracs.
Okay.
GP's a silent.
The commitments for the match will come from the Georgia Florida.
Okay.
GP won't be silent.
So we have no worries. We just have you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Mr. Lakey, have you had sufficient time for all your questions?
Yes, I just talked one. I think we got all.
Yes, all right. Can you have anything else in the mail? We look forward to a great experience.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good trip home.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. You guys can go to executive.
Now,
we got a little bit more meat.
Okay. We've dealt with the two items on the agenda. But we normally close these meetings by asking any questions they have anything they want to talk about. We don't take any action. Ms. Dempsey, you have anything?
No.
Mr. Moody, you have anything?
No, I have no objection.
Anything? Mr. Bishop? Well, then I say let's go home.
I can't hear you.
Commissioner Fiegel wanted us to ask me to talk about this.
Well, does she want all the commissioners to go? Because that would be a violation of the Sunshine Law.
Yes.
What is his name?
Let me read this.
Yeah.
This is from the chairperson of the board, Commissioner Fiegel. And it's an email to Ted. I didn't get a copy of it. I wasn't copied, but I've got it now. I'm going to read it to y'all. It says, good morning. I would like to be at the workshop meeting tonight. I'm feeling a little stronger each day, praise God, but I'm not planning any activities this week. I will begin getting out some next week as long as I continue to improve. I would like for the board to consider all of us taking the 4-H van together along with the administration and engineer one day next week and visit each of the coastal properties. We would need an evaluation score sheet on each of with a list of important statistics to consider. I think we should start out about 9 a.m. and make it a day, ending up at Roy's and Steinhatchee. I'm available Monday, Thursday, or Friday with a preference for Monday or Thursday. Can't do that.
Well,
you can't do that.
I will say we have achieved her objective in that I've already prepared a list of all the properties and evaluation criteria and rank those, and have graphics or maps or aerials that show the pertinent information for you to consider going forward for the evaluations.
Let me explain something. You certainly have the right to go down there and look at the properties by yourself, but I do not recommend that you go together. That's a violation of the Sunshine Law.
But couldn't we, one at the time, go with Mr. Ted down there?
Sure.
Absolutely. And do
you,
all
go with, you can go with Ted, you can go with the engineer.
Just down there, 15 of them.
Yeah. We need to really look at each individual one of them.
Let's go spend that kind of money and everybody got a book.
Well, and that's why I'm suggesting Mr. Lakey's already asked me to do a concerted effort to achieve the information that is discussed in that email. My suggestion, it may be to your gain by kind of looking at that information and seeing if you agree with the evaluation criteria that may limit or reduce. I don't need to look at all 15 because some of these are glaringly obvious. Maybe I can whittle it down to 5 that I really see to have a potential benefit for us before you headlong and run down there. I mean, tear out if you want. There's a lot of property to look at. A lot of it. And I've done all that, and I'm at a later date, I think he wanted to present it to you guys.
Well, I don't know where, and I've looked at a number of them, so I could, you know, just take a day off myself and go look at the others.
Can you put it on GPS? I don't know where they're at. The only one I know where they're buried off.
That's why I'm telling you,
What bothers me is we can spend a lot of time on this long list of properties. And until we know the value of the property and whether or not the seller is willing to take the value for it, you'll do the appraisal. I wouldn't mind to rank it. You waste your time if you rank a property that is evaluated by the appraiser at $2 million and the owner wants 5.7.
Well, and that's what I'm telling you, is that the cost was not an issue on the evaluation criteria. You start looking at things as with not exposing too much, you know, it's like, okay, does it decentralize the congestion of the traffic of the boating industry?
So we're not supposed to factor in the cost.
Does it have sufficient acreage to actually put a facility on that's above the marsh line? You know, does it have utilities available today? How much additional property is there? Is it accessed by a public right-of-way? Those are the type of fact-based criteria you can look at to see, is this property even have any potential for what we want it for? Then when you get down to that, you say, well, look, here's the top three. Okay, well, let's move forward with the state appraisal aspect. And if you get project number one, which is, you know, your top priority in your 2-hour line, you know, you're saying it's worth $100 and they want $500 for it, then you go to number two. You know, but at least you've shortlisted it down based on fact more so than personal opinion.
No, our criteria is that this property will give the citizens access to the Gulf.
What objective I looked at when I did it, and, you know, I sat down with Mr. Lakey and I kind of listed some criteria that it basically has that focus of, I'm looking to site a single lane ramp that has adequate parking for that facility. Mm-hmm. Not anything bigger, not anything smaller. It's that mindset. So if you, I have a starting point. So I said, I need this much land for this, and I need to have this much accessibility to it. Now let me start, and the number, literally I went property by property by property, and then just whatever they are, and then I start sorting. And you sort them based on, you know, the most optimum down to the least optimum.
Well, help me out. You said single lane, just one boat at a time. Is that what you're talking about?
Single launch lane, yes, lane, yes, sir. That's the minimum, obviously, that you would be looking for.
Would be one. If you
I'm not
one,
talking about having
accommodate four.
A line walk dirt launch ramp going down there. I'm talking about a commercial facility. A
concrete ramp.
Yes, sir.
You can take that ramp, it's that spring movie ramp down there. There's a million person come out of Georgia every day to put in right down at Spring Woods. And we have a lot of traffic going there, you know, coming and going.
Spring Woods is one of these. There's 15 properties, and Spring Woods is one of those.
Yeah.
All I would say is just look at the criteria with an open mind without any presupposed decisions. And if you disagree with the criteria, well, then let's know and we can resort that. Otherwise, just kind of look at the facts to say, I've got good reason and justification for doing this. You know, one of the first criteria I put on there was community support. I have no way on God's green earth figuring that out. But yet, that should be a true driving factor of, you know, somebody wanted in that backyard.
Okay. Add something to this discussion. You know, Mr. Moody went to the meeting today, this afternoon, and there was not one talk of projects at that meeting. It was all a discussion on whether they're going to keep this consultant or not, whether they're going to keep this consultant for 4 years as opposed to 15 years. So there is not an urgency on projects, is there, Mr. Moody?
I want people to know that Taylor County is not running behind on that situation.
Exactly.
And we're right up front with best of it.
And there is not a sense of urgency to rank these or anything like that. So
we're not behind that eight ball on there, none of that paperwork or anything.
Right. So do we certainly need to look at them again? Yes, we certainly need to think about ranking, but I don't see the urgency to go down there next week or, you know, need more time to look at them. We certainly have it.
By tomorrow at lunch, I'll have all I lack is just a few property information sheets, and then I will have all the information which I am anticipating having to present to you on all 15 properties ready to hit production and make copies of for, you know, to receive at either a workshop setting, which I think is probably more favorable where you can have an open dialogue, and that kind of control that discussion amongst the, you know, let me present to you more so than being lambasted just because I didn't pick property A over property B.
Only thing I heard today that really was upbeat was there is a chance that with this administration in Washington now, that 15-year, getting your money every 15 years, is a chance we might could get money quicker, or they might set up some way we could bond against it. The consultant I talked to about it, they're working it all the way through Washington to try to change that 15-year business.
Yeah.
And that would be a blessing for everybody.
It'd be nice if you pledged those revenues against the bond.
Right. I mean, they're working both ends toward the middle to try to get that took care of.
So if I'm going to look at any properties, I probably need to do it next week.
It's up to you, sir. I mean, I'm at discretion on when I'm supposed to present it.
You're going to come back and present when?
I don't know. That's
we haven't said that. They were on the last meeting.
I'd kind of like us to sit down and he and I make sure we're at one accord before we get up here and provide a unified front.
Right. Well, when we got best situation we could, you're going to call another meeting or Pam's going to call it.
Okay.
Whatever.
All right. Work to do. Anybody else have anything you need to talk about?
Yeah. Well, I was under the impression that there was a consent item removed from the last agenda that you, not you specific, but y'all may have additional questions that you want to clarify before.
We might as well do that now. The question arose on the consent agenda item was the change order number 2.
Yes, sir.
Which had to do with the size of the culverts.
The headwaters, yes, sir.
And the headwaters. Was this one of our consulting engineers' errors?
It was, and I would call it, it was a mistake. Yes, it was a mistake that was, I don't know what the right word is, but it was made by the surveyor. When he went out to collect the size of the culvert, whether he read the tape wrong, whether he typed it in wrong, whatever, that size was incorrect relative to what was actually in the ground. When the contractor got to the point of already having procured the headwalls, set on the ground, they go to dig it out to be able to extend the pipes. This isn't the right size pipe, or is the size pipe that we see on the plans. And that's when, obviously, the discussion starts and they start talking money to change things.
And the liability to fix this, it appears, is falling on the county. When really, the surveyor was probably the one at fault.
Yeah.
Can you ready to get him to share in some of the cost?
Yes, sir. That's always a consideration. And DOT has a method in which they address what they call, what's generally openly called errors and omissions. And when you look at that, the consultant has a responsibility to perform a reasonable level of due diligence in performing their task, and they have a responsibility to ensure that they are applying engineering practice to ensure health and safety, just like anyone else. I mean, I have the same responsibility. When you get into these errors and omissions, you have to determine, okay, were they negligent in their work product? And that negligence is, according to the Florida statutes, is defined as a failure by a professional engineer to utilize due care in performing an engineering capacity or failing to have due regard for acceptable standards and engineering principles. Did I consider when I suggested approval of the change order as they were negligent in their activities? No, sir, I don't. You know, that's when you get to a job that increases in complexity, the obvious opportunity for mistakes becomes more prevalent. Is it a mistake that I see routinely in survey work products? Yes. I mean, that's the reality of it, is when they get out there and go to collect the size of that pipe and it's full of dirt, they make a reasonable effort to get down there and dig it, and hopefully it's, you know, close to what it is. I even see wrong types of materials. They call it a reinforced concrete, and it's plastic, you know, things like that, that have an impact when you get to where you're at construction level. So there's three different things that DOT looks at when they say there's costs. Okay, so they're asking for a change order. There's work delays that the contractor's going to ask for or could ask for. There's rework. In other words, I did something, now I got to redo something. And then there's extra work. So the contractor today hasn't asked for any additional delays or anything. They've just said, hey, we've got a difference here. We need to fix it. This is how much we're going to charge you to fix it. There wasn't anything that was put in place that they had to tear out and then redo. So the first two categories they haven't met. The last one is extra work. And the extra work, as you probably remember from the hospital, is there's this terminology called betterment that, you know, as long as it's value-added work and that it's going to the project and it's not something that you wouldn't have paid for had it been in there from the beginning originally, then you don't have to, then that's not a basis for a claim. So the only thing that is really in there is that there is allowable in the DOT specs. When you have a change work, they're allowed to put overhead and profit on top of that. You know, there's a flat rate that they can add to it, and it's straight out of the specs. And, you know, of course, the contractor did that. You know, they have in their full right to do it. That's the only part of the cost that really hasn't been backed out or hasn't been credited. Even the head walls, we were able to use them at one of the other cross drains. Whereas the first thing out of their mouth was, we bought them, we can't use them, you're going to have to pay for them, and I'll deliver them to your yard. I'm like, no, you know, we're not going to do that. Yeah. So we found a way to reuse them as part of the project, which avoided $20,000 of cost. So when I look at this, you know, I start thinking from the contractor's perspective and say, the only cost that I really should be focusing on is that little overhead and profit. You know, is it warranted to jump on that right now and to say, okay, well, you know, we're gonna hit you with this, you need to pay us back? Probably not. You know, you have to think in the back of your mind, it's a big game of checks and balances and give and take at times. You know, like Mr. Moody, he had asked me into the project, he said, you know, right there at the intersection with Puckett Road, where Carl Cemetery comes into it, because of approaching traffic or, you know, cutting the curve tight, they tend to run off the edge, and it's kind of busting off the edge of it. Can we fix that while we're there? Well, you know, it hadn't been that long ago we did Puckett Road, and from an engineering perspective, you run up to the previous joint and you start there. Well, we asked the contractor, hey, you know, can you go ahead and catch this while you're doing the widening? And they've made one effort already to do that. So, you know, you have to kind of weigh these things back and forth from a project perspective and say, okay, you know, am I being in a position that I'm really paying money that I'm not getting any benefit out of, or is this something that I've really received an additional value here that is it worth, you know, ruining a professional relationship for something that's literally, the change order in and of itself is 2% of the project cost. I wish we could put contingencies in this. If we could, it would probably be 10 or 15% and you'd never see me. But, you know, these jobs are so tight that, remember, this one was, we got an agreement. We gave the bids and the task orders for the design and the CEI. We gave those to DOT. They gave us a supplemental agreement to meet those dollars. I mean, I think we were within $4,000. a first change order, which was due to additional turtles moving in, and additional silt fencing was $6,000. You know, so you already busted it right away.
Well, so, we probably, from what I heard you say, we better go along with this.
There are times when, you know, things should be fixed. Yeah, no, we're not making the decision tonight. We'll bring it back to the agenda. Yeah,
right. Don't make a decision tonight.
Don't make a decision.
But there are times when we do a contract, I mean, with a project, and it's appropriate to
give them any questions. More.
No, yeah. We've already talked, and I think both ends way toward the middle. We on top of it. Yeah. You know, I think so.
I guess just put it on in the consent agenda next time, if it's all right.
Yes, sir. We will resubmit, I presume.
Yes.
I will tell you one thing that Kenneth mentioned, who was eminently correct. An example of betterment is this. Say, for instance, you had a piece of I owned a piece of property, and you came on to it and stayed there for a number of years. And I finally realized that I owned it and you didn't. And I sued you in what's called ejectment. I was going to kick you out. But during that period of time, you built a barn. Mm-hmm. You cross-fenced it and so forth. So I sued you, but one of your countersuits would be, well, I've improved the property. You're entitled to funds from me. And he said, oh. I'm saying, oh, darn, I don't want to do that. But that's what happens, you know. That's what betterment is. And it's an equitable principle in the law. And quantum merit is another one, too.
One thing I thought about, the Mr. Swain fence and all, that was always took into consideration. They took the fence out along through the edge of the pond there.
Yes, sir, we did.
Yeah. Was that on county property or was that on his property? Or?
No, sir, it was on his property within reason. I mean, it was close right there along the line. We worked with Mr. Swain as well as his children to coordinate that as part of the right-of-way certification because the toe of the slope, because we were extending the shoulders and the toe of the slope was extending beyond that, we needed to be able to pick the fence up, put the shoulder down, and then reconstruct the fence line.
They're going to reconstruct the fence?
Absolutely. And and that's what we tell everyone, is that when we go through there and have to remove things that are not on our property, we will always replace those with something that is a condition that is equal or greater value.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
You know, we have to. DOT's pretty tight now that we actually have to issue an attested right-of-way certification that says we either are staying on property we own or we have agreements that address those encroachments outside of our property. That's what's holding me up on San Pedro. There's a few that just don't want to agree. So I've asked our engineer to go back and say, see what we can do to tighten up that. If we're beyond the clear zone, go ahead and tighten it up a little bit more and let's get back inside the right of way so we can try that job.
You know, the biggest complaint that I've heard on Carlton here is all that plastic down the road. That's the biggest complaint.
The plastic down the road.
Where it's got it on in stakes and stuff.
That's silt fence.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the biggest complaint I've had because those people that's on the north side of that road said they've never been drop of water over there. So, you know, that's... Well,
but there's, if you'll look, there's a good bit of them that are gopher tortoise protection areas.
We had to put all
of those ones that are kind of
get over that.
Angled back towards the fence line. We have to have a 25-foot separation between an active burrow and our work limits, and that's part of the preservation that we have to do in there.
A lot of them people think it's because of water. They don't know the gophers is here.
There's a good bit of it that's for gophers.
All right, Kenneth, we appreciate you. Nice. I'm good to go.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Anybody else? And we won't adjourn with this meeting to be done.
I want to say one thing. We'd like to call y'all. They did work on the thing, hadn't you? New road that they built and they put down there.
Yeah.
They did work on that today, didn't they? Right. The humps people were talking about the other night in the road and the new milling they put down.
Yeah.
They were going to go down there today and try to grade it down and roll it to get it smooth. And maybe it'll be all right. You know.
Yeah.
If anybody calls you, tell them that they have work on it.
No, okay, I learned all about railroads tonight.
I
imagine the state's DOT man being involved in it. There'll be some upgrading that comes out.
I hope so.
Before it's over with.
They won't do it without pushing them. You know about the railroad.
Yeah,
they're always right.
Well, even saying that,
they're always right.
We will fix the crossing in as they in life, kind of, and I forget the terminology you use, but it means you're putting it back the way, the same type of way it is today. You get $60 million, then you can't improve that to a more durable type crossing or something that we don't have this issue 10 years down the road again?
Well, it's just a lesson to get what we're getting. But if I'm like you, it would be nice if they could go back to the time to the way when it's so
they go in that. Let's go home.
That's a way.
Someone doesn't understand what we're trying to do, so we'll
cancel. Oh, right.
enough restriction. And it's like you walking up there and going down the street.
We'll work on that. Oh, that's right. He's over at 49, but an awful lot of people.
Here at one, a football coach.